safer sex, intercourse,
condoms, sexually transmitted infections,
HIV,
STI,
HIV, sexual health,
research,
treatment,
condoms,
STI,
sexual attraction,
sexually transmitted infections,
contraceptive,
sex education,
sexual health specialist.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the podcast. I'm Tom and you're listening to the Sydney Sexual Health Centre podcast where we discuss all things related to sexual health. Today we'll be discussing the breadth of roles available in sexual health nursing and the places it can take you. I'm joined by clinical nurse specialist Cherie Bennett. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you and thank you for having me.
Cherie is an academic at the University of Wollongong, a medical educator at the Australasian Society for HIV, Viral Hepatitis and Sexual Health Medicine, and program manager at the Kirby Institute. So quite a few hats there. Was sexual health nursing something you were always interested in?
That is a really good question, Tom. And probably the shorter answer is no. And nursing more broadly wasn't actually an area I was interested in. So I had started at uni doing an exercise science degree. And then at the time I failed a subject, which was, highly frustrating, but led me into doing population health as well. So I did my double degree in exercise science and population health. And then once I'd finished, I actually was thinking more broadly around putting some clinical work or a clinical aspect to my population health. So I went straight back and did nursing. With that, though, it was a bit of a bumpy road because nursing for me, when I went on my placements, I didn't really enjoy them. And with that, I was starting to think, okay, where and what I might do. And it actually led me to nearly dropping out of my nursing degree to use my population health and get a role. With that, I applied for various jobs, but one being with ASHEN, who you mentioned earlier, the Australasian Society for HIV, Sexual Health and Viral Hepatitis Medicine. And it was there that I started a part-time role while studying nursing, and I was opened up to this whole world of sexual health and viral hepatitis and bloodborne viruses more broadly, and I met some pretty incredible and influential nurses. So it started to make me realize that nursing was very broad and there is very many areas that you could take it. So to go back to your question, was sexual health nursing something I was always interested in? No, nursing wasn't something I was interested in, but I'm so glad I've landed myself here and particularly in this specialty.
So currently you work across a variety of roles, including practicing nursing, teaching at university, and as a program manager at the Kirby. How did you come to wear so many hats? And what advice would you give to someone wanting to pursue a career similar to yours?
Yeah, it's interesting, and lots of people ask me this quite a lot. So I work clinically as a nurse, which I thoroughly enjoy, and I don't think that'll ever change. But whilst working in a policy role with New South Wales Health, I concurrently studied a master's in adult education, and I majored in workplace and organisational learning. So it was during that time I was sort of opening my eyes to other areas and how I could use my nursing. And then actually while I was on maternity leave and coming back after my second baby, I started to really brainstorm as to how I could use my master's more but stay in the sector. So with that, I had, it was actually just very casually had coffees with ex-colleagues, people that had kind of mentored me to kind of hash out what this would look like if I was to use my master's more, stay working clinically, which led me to a role at the Kirby Institute, which is a research institute based at the University of New South Wales. And it specializes in infectious diseases. And whilst I knew for me, academia wasn't necessarily where I wanted to head, I still was very interested in that research institute. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were actually in the process of looking for someone to manage a research training program that had an adult education background and was in the HIV space. So it was a really nice fit for me to, step inside the Kirby, get a broad understanding of the incredible work they do there, get a better understanding around research and its role more broadly in the sector. So that was kind of that hat. And then I've always kept, I made a promise to myself that I wanted to stay clinical regardless, because I think it's just so important to stay at the coal face for me personally. So that's why I kind of keep that hat, and it keeps me very contemporary, particularly when I'm teaching and working with a lot of clinicians on the ground and people at the coal face. And then my role with the University of Wollongong in terms of teaching nursing students, I thoroughly enjoy that. And I know myself the amount of times I nearly left the nursing career, for thinking that I was going to be working in a hospital for the rest of my life, which I know wasn't really the fit for me. And I don't think nurses realize, or nursing student realize, that there's so many different ways you can use your nursing career. So I work with first and third year nurses, actually. The first year is really a subject around primary healthcare, and it's quite eye-opening for them. And the third year is around clinical excellence and governance, which is another sort of passion area of mine, policy and clinical excellence. So I wear a few role hats, I guess. It continues to make me feel really motivated by what I do, and it just really demonstrates the kind of colourful career you can have as a nurse.
And what's some of the advice that you give to your students?
For my students, I really like to reinforce that don't base any decisions on your placements, because I was one of those people that nearly dropped out halfway through, and it was based on some not so fun experiences on placements and not realizing what I could or where I could go with my nursing. So I remind them that a placement is a placement, and that they need to just be thinking that there is so much that they can do with their nursing. I also, particularly my third years, like to talk to them about their new graduate program, if that's where they're going to go, and it's not the be all and end all, and that there's so many different things you can do and make your own new graduate program. And also to remind them of the pivotal role they'll have moving forward for our future nurses, because I think any nurse can relay a poor learning or placement experience, and they sometimes seem very frequent. And I like to reiterate to that group in particular that when you go out and you're working as a nurse, you're actually having huge impacts on the future of nursing as well, and the learning environments you create for them.
Your career has taken you to some interesting places, like working in Papua New Guinea as an educator. What was this experience like?
Look, again, if you'd asked me in my nursing studies if I was ever going to use my nursing and work overseas, I don't think that was something that was ever on my radar. As mentioned, I work at the Australasian Society for HIV, Viral Hepatitis and Sexual Health Medicine, and they have a domestic and a global division. And in my role as a medical educator, slowly I've started to gravitate into the global division as well, because some of my work at the Kirby is involving the Asia Pacific region. My first trip to Papua New Guinea was very eye-opening. I'd been working on projects desk-based here in Australia for a couple of years prior, so I had an understanding, but actually being in country and working with key clinicians in the country and doing clinical mentoring with them and training is nothing but rewarding. It's a very stark reminder, I guess, of how resource-rich we are here in Australia. But in terms of, you know, me evolving as an educator and getting to work with people that are faced by really challenging conditions every day, and the way they work through these, it's incredibly inspiring. Mm-hmm. So I'm reminded while I'm there how lucky we are here in Australia, the resources we get to work with, but also how you can be innovative and work outside the box or the square or whatever you want to call it, because these clinicians and these people that work on the ground are incredible and motivating in what they do. So I've had a bit of time there. Another place is an example as well is Vanuatu. I've done some training there as well. Again, it just reiterates how lucky we are here in Australia, but these clinicians are just nothing but inspiring. They're also dealing with a lot of stigma and discrimination. The clients that, you know, coming into their services, there's just a lot more that they have to work through. So yeah, again, nursing and nursing students, I remind them of these opportunities if this is a place that they could see them doing stuff with in the future.
And I guess what are the pathways to doing that for nurses or like for students in particular?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question, Tom. And sometimes I get asked this, like, how did I kind of map this out? And again, it wasn't probably not an area that I saw myself going into or had envisaged it. And I'm so glad I have now. What I would say and what I tell my nursing students in particular is start building up a kind of bit of a portfolio. So you have to be very proactive. You have to work out your interest area. And if you don't know, be open, be a yes person in a way, and see what opportunities arrive. So there's no kind of clear pathway, particularly in sexual health nursing. It's kind of creating a bit of a portfolio of experience. There's actually a lot of transferable skills that people don't realize. It's a very niche area that I work in, but having sat on interview panels and met so many different and amazing nurses, like, you know, we've had nurses come from aged care, and because of their very strong communication skills, we've had nurses come from mental health and the same reasons. We've had nurses come from intensive care. And again, it's an area of nursing that really relies on communication skills. And if that's a real strength of yours, that will come across in an interview. So it's about those things and things like, you know, doing it, the nurse immunizer course is an example, because we're all about infectious diseases and the prevention. So starting to think a bit more laterally about how you can build up your different skills and experience. And the other thing as well, I'd say, not necessarily in the international space, but just nursing this space in general, be proactive, call the nurse unit manager at a sexual health clinic to have a chat, or the educator. Go in and have a tour, because as someone who used to work as a clinical nurse educator, I've met multiple nurses that have come through to have a tour. And then what do you know, I've seen their name come across my desk when applying for a job. And that's the kind of stuff that sticks with you. So I think it's about having a really proactive kind of perspective with it all as well. And another thing about it too, Tom, is because I do get that question quite a lot. How would I become a sexual health nurse? How could I do stuff in the international space? One thing I would say as well, as I work with nurses from all over the country, is don't worry if you work somewhere where you don't have a publicly funded sexual health clinic, as an example, because then these nurses say to me, well, I don't have a clinic, where would I work? Sexual health nursing should be taking place everywhere. So if you're working in a general practice as the primary healthcare nurse there, that's an ideal place to implement sexual health nursing there, as an example, because us at publicly funded sexual health clinics, you guys get more access to the patients that we need to be seeing. So nurses are so well placed in any setting, really. So I think too, it's about not getting too sort of single-minded as to where you want to head, but being a bit more open-minded as where you could implement this kind of nursing, because it's well within our scope.
Yeah. And I guess PlaySafe has some resources on PlaySafe Pro at the moment, including a new friendliness checklist for GP settings.
Yep.
So that could be something that practice nurses implement as well.
It's a really good point, Tom, around the resources that are out there. And I think it's about, again, like PlaySafe Pro and knowing those kinds of things that exist, and that, yeah, you can go, how do I become more youth friendly? Or, you know, a place like Ashen that offers a heap of training and education free for nurses wanting to upskill in the area. So there's lots of really good stuff out there. And again, it's just taking that proactive approach and finding it and building up your skill set yourself too.
U equals U is an area that you're passionate about discussing as well. How knowledgeable are clinicians around the recent advances in HIV treatment as prevention?
It is an incredible area to talk about and to educate on, because I think it's one of the key areas that I've seen evolve, and we've learned so much in the time that I've been in the sector, which has been about 14 years. Just to track back, I think, you know, U equals U for yourself and me, Tom, is like our everyday language, and it's like we're talking a different language. And I'm always reminded when I'm working with clinicians from every specialty that it's not as necessarily as broad in terms of people understanding what it means. So it means undetectable equals untransmissible. And again, I have clinicians say to me, what do you mean by that, Cherie? I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. So then again, stripping it back. So if someone has HIV and they're living with HIV, they're taking their medication as prescribed, so daily medication, and they achieve an undetectable viral load, and that is maintained, that they actually can't sexually pass on their HIV. So you can imagine this has been it's been hugely powerful for those living with HIV and also those living without HIV. So there's been a lot of media attention around what we call U equals U, particularly earlier this year. We had a big international conference hosted here in Australia, and the World Health Organization now have released a very clear statement around this, that if you're using what they call pre-qualified tests for viral load, meaning WHO has essentially approved it, and that someone has an undetectable viral load, that again, there is zero risk of passing it on sexually. We can use that word zero now very confidently. Mm-hmm. But again, I think we're working in a time where if you had worked in the 80s when there was, you know, the Grim Reaper and huge campaigns around HIV and it was killing masses of people, and what we've seen, it's going to be a time and a period where we're going to have to get clinicians on board and feel confident in the science and the data. There's been some recent research that it still demonstrates we've got a long way to go. And there was a study which surveyed GPs, and they had 407 responses. So we're talking about a large cohort here. And what they found in particular was one in four GPs were neutral or disagreed with U equals U. So that key messaging of undetectable equals untransmissible. So we've still got, you know, this is highly suggestive of, you know, further training is needed. And it's going to be crucial to address these barriers, because The other thing is, if the more that we get GPs, as an example, discussing this and getting people on board, the more we can roll out things like PrEP as well. So pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. So treatment as prevention is one of the biggest kind of key preventative methods in terms of preventing ongoing transmission and also acquiring HIV. So look, it's fantastic. We've come so far. The science is now clear with zero risk, but we've still got a lot of work to do.
And who are the three people who have been most influential throughout your career?
Well, I thought about this question and I'm going to cheat in a way because I was like, how could I narrow this down to three? So I've kind of got three groups of people. And my first would be my parents, because I have lived a world of different ideas and thought bubbles about what I might do with myself as I was growing up. And my mum and dad really instilled a sense of belief in me that I was capable of anything. And that's still the case now. I present some very random ideas at times and they're like, sure, give it a crack. They really encouraged, I guess, my dreams and nurtured my passions. And they saw me throughout my university sort of zigzagging and working out where I wanted to land, and were always really supportive around that. The second crew of people I would describe is some very important nurses to me. And as I mentioned, I nearly dropped out of my nursing degree halfway through when I got a job with ASHM. And it was here I met some pretty incredible nurses working in the sector. Donna Tilly, Vicky Knight, Carolyn Murray, Shannon Woodward and Karen Biggs. I got to see these incredible nurses delivering training and education in regards to sexual health nursing. Carolyn was working a role at the ministry at the time, and I got to see what the policy space looked like, and I went on to work for her for a period of time. And yeah, they really inspired me. And, you know, and when I was navigating nursing and my new graduate year, which again, I nearly left the profession because I decided to try ward nursing because I felt like I had to. And again, nearly dropped out of the profession. And then again, they were sort of there giving me great guidance and advice. So yeah, very, very grateful for that time. And then third person's been pretty critical. Lavinia Crooks, or the late Lavinia Crooks, who was the CEO of ASHM when I first started there, and we worked together closely, and I've never met someone so passionate. You know, she possibly could be described as a bit of a bulldozer, but I would see her in these high level meetings when we were working on projects together. And then we would be out to dinner with these key people that night, having very jovial conversations. She was one of the hardest workers I've ever met. She taught me what passion and drive is all about and why it's so important to feel so passionate about what you do. So, yeah, I'll be forever grateful to have had the opportunity to work with her in my early stages of my career.
What advice do you have for your students studying nursing or anybody considering studying nursing?
I think, yeah, we've touched on it, but I can't stress enough what a diverse career it can offer. I think, you know, nursing and frontline workers, it can get a bad rap. And, you know, COVID in particular, we've seen what a burnout that has created for our profession. But I remind my nursing students, or I remind nurses that I work with and train within clinic, that, you know, it is such an area that you can do so much. You don't necessarily have to be in a hospital. You can be working community nursing, primary healthcare, research, education. It is actually such a transferable skill set that you'll have and be able to take anywhere. So I do encourage my nursing students that want to leave to keep going and finish. And nurses that I work with more broadly in training and education, I just say, you know, there is so much you can be doing. So if you're not feeling the passion or the spark where you are, start exploring and seeing what else is out there for you. But it's certainly a career that is so rewarding.
And looking ahead, what do you see being the biggest positive impact for HIV and sexual health nursing on the horizon?
Oh, look, how long is a piece of string here, Tom? I think, you know, I thought about this as well. And one of the key things we've seen, particularly in HIV in the last 10 years, is that we've seen a 48% decline in new diagnoses over the last 10 years. And nurses have played a pivotal role in that decrease. We've had the larger rollout of what we call pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. And since it was approved and listed on what we call our PBS here in Australia, it's well within the nurse's scope of practice to identify patients and clients that would be eligible to do their initial testing, to do their monitoring. And, you know, and nurse practitioners can prescribe PrEP. So, you know, that's been a huge positive impact. Where we're headed, I think there's still so many advances that are happening in HIV. We're seeing new treatments and the ways in which they're administered. So long-acting injectables, you know, and that's well within our scope to administer those. We've been doing injectable treatments like the treatment for syphilis for many years. So that's really exciting because we know that the data is pretty clear in terms of improving quality of life with these new advances in treatments. And then, you know, just moving forward, again, it's going to be our role in prevention and things like that. So there's just, and it's a space that's ever evolving. I don't think there's too many other disease areas that in over 40 years have achieved what they it is now. And it's a lifelong manageable condition and nurses have been critical to that. I am really grateful for the opportunity to talk about something in an area that I feel so passionate about. And it's just such an area that so many people don't realize you can do as a nurse. And yeah, so much potential.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sharing some of your career with us today.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
You've been listening to the Sydney Sexual Health Centre podcast, where I've been speaking with Cherie Bennett about her diverse career in sexual health nursing. If you'd like to find out some more information about some of the things we've discussed today, we've put some resources in the description, and you can follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you like the podcast, please share and subscribe.